Justice Miller Lerman is recused from this matter, and the court will be joined by District Court Judge Mariquin from the 5th Judicial District and counsel. Mr. Pecker, before you begin, let's let Judge Mariquin get here, and she has arrived. And Judge Mariquin, I'm going to allow you to introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Judge Mariquin, Tina Mariquin. I'm from the 5th Judicial District.
And we thank you very much for being with us today. Mr. Becker, good morning to you. And is it Mr. Nickel? Good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, sir.
Then, Mr. Becker, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I represent Michael L. Henry, an individual who is not the judgment debtor in this case. He's an individual that owns, in particular, Unit 201, which was subject to attempted levy of execution, and other units in the Lion Place Condominium Association. A garnishment was levied against Mr. Henry's unit, in particular Unit 201 in the first case we appealed, and then effectively all of his units in the second case we appealed.
You said garnishment, you mean they sought a writ of execution.
Writ of execution, yeah. I apologize. The reason why I reference garnishment is because Mr. Henry had been subject to two separate garnishments shortly after the judgment. The judgment dated back to December 16, 2015. The levy of execution against Mr. Henry's units, the one that was actually attempted to be served on him, wasn't even filed until one day short of 6 years. But 5 years earlier, Mr. Henry had been subjected to two separate garnishments. Both garnishments, Mr. Henry said, I have no property that is subject to satisfy the judgment entered against the Lion Place Condominium Association. The McGill Restoration chose not to traverse those garnishment answers. That had a binding effect. In their brief at page 19, there's a declaration without citation, without analysis, that says it would be absurd to hold that due to a garnishee's answer to garnishment interrogatories, a creditor may not proceed with other methods of collection upon the debtor itself. Well, first of all, Mr. Henry's not the debtor, but just in retort to that claim, go back and look at the NC Hybrids case where you established that a failure to traverse results in a discharge, which was then reiterated and repeated in the Huntington versus Peterson case. In the NC Hybrids case, this court said, when a plaintiff institutes a garnishment as a statutory remedy in aid of execution to satisfy a judgment, the plaintiff is bound by the mandatory provisions and consequences prescribed in the garnishment statutes. One of those consequences is that when you fail to traverse the answer, there's a discharge if you fail to do it. And undisputably, there was a failure to traverse those answers within 20 days. This court went on to say in NC Hybrids, once a plaintiff commences a garnishment, a garnishee, in other words, Mr. Henry, has as much interest in the plaintiff in the determination whether the garnishee is liable for payment or delivery of property to the plaintiff. Court went on to say,
Is that talking about him, the person in Mr. Henry's position being discharged in their capacity as garnishee or discharged from any collection efforts in any capacity?
They're discharged. Discharge means discharge because garnishee shall be released and discharged. That conjunctive phrase is utilized.
And what is your legal authority for that assertion?
That's the legal authority is NC plus hybrids versus grower seeds, 228 Nebraska 306. And you repeated that same analysis in Huntington versus Peterson. So
you also mentioned that Mr. Henry is not the judgment debtor, correct?
Yes.
And aren't there other assignments of error you have that are based on on that fact?
Yes.
Do you want to address those assignments of
error? The whole process is flawed. They use the writ of execution process, which in Fox versus Whitbeck, this court said can only be used against the judgment debtor. I was the appellant in that case that got the reversal. And in that case, by analogy, they were trying to enforce a child support lien through the execution statutes. This court reversed and rejected that because it said, listen, the statutes under the execution framework talk about the judgment debtor. That's important because in this case, they went and got a writ of execution to try to execute against Mr. Henry's property for a judgment he was not liable for.
Who was the judgment debtor in your judgment?
Judgment debtor was the association.
So then we have this condominium statute. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but
yeah, and there is a lien created that they can go through a process right. to foreclose.
Setting your other arguments aside just for now, based on the garnishment or the timeliness or the claim splitting, just set those aside. And your understanding is the judgment creditor would have a lien against the unit, correct?
Yes.
And how do they go about enforcing that lien, if not by seeking a writ of execution?
They foreclose it like any other process. And why we know they had an idea of that is because they filed a petition for foreclosure. It appears that the supplemental transcript they filed at supplemental transcript T7 in case number 22-137, they never served it, but they filed a petition to foreclose. They identified three of the units in the association, 101, 103, B01, and they asked the court in a petition they never filed. They filed a petition within the case, which I think is flawed, but they asked to declare they had a valid judgment lien for the balance and then to ask for a writ of assistance directing that the property be sold.
Your contention is that should have been filed as a separate action for equitable foreclosure seeking
yes.
to enforce
yes.
the lien.
And why it's important is think about it. There are judgment creditors. There's banks that have lent money to these people that own the association. By just serving a writ of execution against Mr. Henry saying, your property is going to be sold in 30 days, they didn't give any notice to the banks, to Mutual of Omaha Bank, to say, hey, you know, this property may be sold even though you lent several hundreds of thousands of dollars against it. Why you have to go through the petition to foreclose is just like we do in any other foreclosure case. When I go foreclose a mechanics lien for some contractor, I name the other interested parties. I name the bank. I name other creditors. Why? To establish my priority and ultimately the relief. That's the process that they should have employed in this case, and they never did. And once 4 years lapsed, because I think there's a 4-year limitation to do that foreclosure, it was gone, but certainly by 5 years. And because the lien against the property goes away after 5 years. They try to extend the lien against the property by saying, well, we issue garnishments. But of course, that flips their other argument on the head as to why they shouldn't be bound by the garnishments, because the garnishments extended their time to pursue this execution. Then why aren't they bound by those answers? The bottom line it comes down to, I think, could they have sought to make this argument about the lien when they got Mr. Henry's garnishment answer back in January of 2016, a month after the judgment? Yes, they could have done the exact same thing. They could have filed an appropriate petition to foreclose. They didn't do it. They waited 6 years to use the execution statutes, which this court unambiguously said are only applicable to the judgment debtor. Mr. Henry's not the judgment debtor.
Before your time expires, do you want to address the fact that we have two appeals and that opposing counsel filed a motion to summarily dismiss one of them on jurisdictional grounds? Do we have jurisdiction of both appeals? And what do we make of the fact that after you appealed the first denial of the motion to quash the writ of execution, the judgment creditor apparently sought another one. Can they do that?
I because Lion Place never filed an original bond, I think arguably they can still pursue collection. Under the case we cite, it's W Ethanol versus Renewable Energy, which talks about the concept of it's recognized that when a motion to quash an execution is denied, that's an appealable order. That's cited in my brief. And I guess in terms of the dismissal of the second case, my analysis would be, think about it. I have to have a remedy to appeal it because I appeal the first one. They come back and try to fix it, I guess, with a second execution by naming all the units. And I'm not supposed to appeal that. I'm facing a sheriff's sale in 30 days. We have to have a remedy, I think.
And if there's no jurisdiction,
they shouldn't have done what they did.
It actually helps you, right? Because everything would be void.
Then that would be a nullity. They should have never done what they did.
Thank you.
I only have 30 seconds. I'd like to reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Nickel, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice.
You may proceed.
Chief Justice Hevekin, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Cody Nickel. I'm here today on behalf of the appellee in this case, PBPM LLC, who is the successor in interest to McGill Restoration, Inc.
Before we get to your legal arguments, can you just help us understand why we have these sort of serial writs of execution being sought? We have two that on which motions to quash were filed, and those motions were denied. And then it looks like from the record, there was a third or maybe a second intervening one where a motion to quash was granted. What's going on here?
Yeah, Justice Papik, I would like to address that. So first, the initial writ of execution, there was a motion to quash which was granted or which was denied by the trial court. And that was the initial appeal in this action. I was not counsel at the time, and I don't believe my firm was when the second was filed, so I can't answer as to why we filed the second writ of execution in this matter. But that was ultimately heard by the district court while this appeal was pending, and the district court granted the motion to quash on the second writ. And then while this appeal was pending, again, we filed a third writ of execution that was addressing the district court's grant of the motion to quash, and then there was...
Granting the second.
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay.
And then there was another motion to quash the third writ of execution, which was ultimately denied, which led to the second appeal in this case.
And your position is that after Mr. Henry filed the first appeal, the district court lost jurisdiction to do anything?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think the proper...
Wouldn't that make your second writ of execution also void because the district court would lack jurisdiction to issue it?
So the second writ of execution that was ultimately quashed was filed before...
I'm sorry, the third. third writ, second appeal. Wouldn't that also, under your logic, be void?
That's right, Your Honor. And I think we would be, if the second appeal is dismissed, then I think we would be in the position of the first, which was arguing that initial motion to quash was properly denied. So we would be in the position where we can execute under that first writ that was initially denied, the motion to quash was denied by the district court. And so there are numerous issues in the procedure of this case. However, regardless of the complex procedural history, I believe the core issue of this case is much simpler. The core issue of this case is two-part. It is first, whether Nebraska Revised Statute Section 76-875 provides an enforceable valid lien to a judgment creditor against a condominium association as against all units of the association.
Who's the judgment debtor?
The judgment debtor is Lyon Place Condominium Association.
And how do the execution statutes work when you're not seeking to execute against property of the judgment debtor?
We would argue that we are pursuant to the mechanism given to us by the Nebraska legislature, which is Section 76-875 gives us a lien against all of the units of the condominium, and thus our remedy to collect on that lien is to execute thereupon.
Aren't you really arguing that the answer you gave to Justice Papik's previous question about who's the judgment debtor, aren't you really saying, well, it's Lyon Place Condominium Association and all of the owners of condominiums within that association?
I think by extension of the statute at issue here, that could be a proper way to frame it, Your Honor. I believe So Mr. Henry himself, the appellant in this case, is not, he was not a defendant at the time a judgment was entered in this case. There is no explicit liability as a result of the trial in this matter as against Mr. Henry. However, the Nebraska legislature gives a lien as to all units as to the judgment creditor, which in this case is PBPM. So
a judgment lien or some other kind of lien?
I believe the statutory language would render that a judgment lien as against the unit.
Well, a judgment lien arises, I think, as I'm going back to ancient memories here, but it's in Chapter 25 somewhere, I believe. But the lien that you're talking about is not in Chapter 25. It's in Chapter 71, right?
That's right, Your Honor. I believe it's 25-1504 that discusses judgment liens.
So it's not the kind of judgment lien that if I don't pay my bill for something and someone sues me and gets a judgment for X dollars, that judgment by operation of statute somewhere tucked away in Chapter 25 automatically becomes a lien on all of my real estate in that particular county. That's not the kind of judgment lien you're talking about, is it?
It's not, Your Honor. Based on a reading of the statute, I believe that it just simply extends the judgment lien to the units of the condominium association to be collected upon rather than a mechanics lien or something of that nature.
Or a lien on, for example, Mr. Henry's, if Mr. Henry had other property somewhere.
That's right, Your Honor. It wouldn't be a lien against Mr. Henry's car or any of his other personal property. It's simply a lien against the condominium unit itself.
Or even his other real estate, if he had other real estate.
That's right, Your Honor.
How do the execution statutes work then? Because the execution statutes talk about the writ of execution. It's directed that the goods and chattels of the debtor are supposed to be the first things that are levied against. So what do we do with that here, where I think we heard you concede that Mr. Henry's goods and chattels aren't a part of the lien?
That's correct, Your Honor. We do concede that his personal properties and chattel are not subject to the lien by virtue of Section 76-875. However, leaving no personal property, goods, or chattel to execute against the lien, I believe by virtue of the execution statutes, we may then execute upon the judgment lien as to what the Nebraska legislature has said that we may execute upon, which is the units themselves. And, Your Honor, one point that I would like to address as well is the issue as to whether or not...
Just to back up, you don't have statutory language to point us to where the legislature has expressly said that you can execute against the individual units. That's an argument based on 76-875.
As well as the execution statutes contained in Section 25-1501 at SEC.
Okay, suppose I'm a creditor of Mr. Henry for a haircut or something, and he doesn't pay me, and I sue him, and I get a judgment. Can I execute on his condominium interest?
Your Honor, I believe that, as Justice Papik said, the primary, the first place you would go to would be personal property, goods and chattels. However, those were not subject to this lien by virtue of the statute. So I believe that is where you would go first if you were...
Assume he doesn't. He persuades the sheriff there's nothing else there. All I have is this condominium interest.
Then yes, Your Honor, I believe under the statute, Section 25-1501.01, you would be able to execute thereupon.
Okay. That's...
Mr. Becker, I believe, has suggested that you used the wrong vehicle. I may have misunderstood the argument, that you simply should have foreclosed on your lien, and that gives everybody the advantage of notice.
That's right.
How do you respond to that?
I would respond to say that absent such an avenue, that is one avenue that is available to PBPM to take, but it's not the exclusive avenue for relief. I think taking such an action would give notice to the creditors to be able to all preserve their rights. However, without doing so, the execution would be subject to the current standing liens in order of priority on the property.
But to bring an equitable foreclosure action, isn't one of the ordinary requirements that you prove that you plead and prove that there's no adequate remedy at law?
That's right, Your Honor. And
you're arguing there is an adequate remedy at law.
That's right.
So in effect, no, you can't foreclose because, at least under your argument, there's an adequate remedy at law.
That is correct. You are correct, Your Honor. Under 1501.01, we do have the adequate remedy at law, which is to execute on the units. One issue that was addressed by the district court below as well is the issue of whether the lien on the units is proportionate as against all units, or whether it is a lien against one unit or all units jointly and severally. What we would like to address, the statutory text operates as a lien against all units, and it does not have a specific language. For instance, the Wisconsin statute that we cite in our brief specifically states that the lien is proportionate as against all units to the condominium association. I see that I'm out of time. May I finish my thought?
You may.
Your Honor? The Nebraska legislature explicitly chose not to include such limiting language, and thus these liens would operate as a joint and several lien against all units of the condominium.
So if you were to pursue beyond the pro rata, it would be up to Mr. Henry to seek contribution from other condominium owners.
That's correct.
That's your position.
That's right.
Would there be a claim for contribution if liability was joint and several?
I believe so, Your Honor, yes. And I believe we addressed the elements of contribution in our brief as well. And with that, Your Honor, I would like to conclude by saying Section 76-875 clearly affords a lien to PBPM as against all units of Lion Place Condominium Association, and the Nebraska execution statutes clearly afford for that remedy to be pursued by PBPM. Accordingly, we would ask that this court affirm the order of the district court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Mr.
27 seconds. Mr. Decker, we're going to give you 1 minute.
Thank you. Your Honor, 76-875, which they rely on, does not use the phrase judgment lien. It uses lien. Just like mechanics lien, just like a thresher's lien, just like a landlord's lien, all those liens need to be foreclosed. If you use Justice Castle's analysis of, well, really there's kind of a fiction here that it's a judgment against the association and all owners, if that's true, then he was discharged when he answered the garnishment interrogatories and they failed to traverse it. But I want you to think about the other overarching implications about using the execution statutes, which are intended for judgment debtors, to try to satisfy this lien, as opposed to foreclosing the lien and naming the appropriate parties and giving notice and having someone determine priorities. What's going to happen to the sheriff's sale of Unit 201? Whose interest is being foreclosed? The documents say we're going to bid the interest of the judgment debtor. That's why if you look at Judge Battalion's analysis, he keeps on saying, I'm not deciding who gets what, it's buyer beware. If you look at the commercial federal case cited in my brief, it talks about trying to maintain the integrity of judicial sales because those are irrevocable bids. What is someone bidding on at this sale?
Well,
what's their priority?
Isn't that true? Whenever a judgment sale of real estate occurs, it would be the real estate that's being sold. And if there's more value than the extent of the judgment, there would be some sort of interpleader or distribution to the persons or persons entitled to it.
But that priority is determined in a lien foreclosure. When I do a case for a roofer, and we got three creditors, and there's somebody with a deed of trust.
But now you're talking about a different. I'm talking about a straight judgment. If I have a judgment against your opponent for X dollars, and he has real estate, and I execute on that real estate, he has no personal property, I execute on that real estate, the sheriff sells that real estate. And if it brings more, then it's distributed to whoever is entitled to that money.
I respectfully disagree. He's not selling the real estate unless you have the foreclosure that determines the priority in order to distributions. What they are selling is the judgment debtor's interest in that property. And that goes back to the verbiage of Fox versus Whitbeck. You're not selling the real estate. You're selling the interest of the judgment debtor in those situations. There's no warranty of title. You just get a sheriff's deed, and you get what you get. And the problem with what they're doing is it invades the notion of upsetting the judicial integrity. The bottom line is there's a simple way to do this. When I do a foreclosure case, I get a judge that says, hey, you can foreclose your lien, but you're subject to Nationwide's first mortgage of 180. If there's excess proceeds over that, then the sheriff distributes it to you. We have none of that. We're going to go into a sheriff sale. No one knows what they're bidding on. No one knows how it's distributed. No one knows the priority of the interest. If you get this sheriff's deed, what's it give you? Are you behind Mutual of Omaha? If you, because you bid on the judgment debtor's interest, the judgment debtor was Lion Place Association. They have no interest in Henry's unit. Henry has that as separate property. In fact, under the evidence, he's actually an additional creditor against the association. They owe him money, which is another reason why he denied the garnishment, said, I don't have anything. The bottom line is they skipped a step here. 76.875 doesn't say you have a judgment lien and can use execution statutes. It says you have a lien. And if you have a lien, there's a process. They knew it. It's shown by the petition. They never prosecuted or foreclosed. And they could have done this all 5 years ago, right after the garnishments.
You finished answering my question.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Counsel, that concludes arguments in McGill Restoration versus Lion Place Condominium Association. And hence, you are excused, and the court is adjourned.